I feel the need for a podcast exploring the films and career of Steven Spielberg. Welcome to Film Encounters of the Spielberg Kind.
Hey.
Yay!
Welcome, mate.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
And welcome.
Thanks.
To Film Encounters of the Spielberg Kind, the podcast in which we explore the films and career of Steven Spielberg and how did he become one of the world's biggest ever movie directors. I'm Tom Ashford and I'm joined, as always, by a man who is also split into multiple segments that can be enjoyed individually, but perhaps best not consumed in their entirety.
Okay,
yeah. And Scott Glasspool.
Yeah, I've got two questions about that. Not about the thing you said about me. That's perfectly reasonable. Why did you call yourself Tom Ashford?
Like, Tom Ashford.
Why did you say it like that? What's that about?
I wanted to make my name and entity seem very singular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we normally would discuss a film, and I wanted to make you sound like three separate entities.
Okay,
like perhaps you would be watching a TV show.
Taken on board. Second question: why did you drag it out for so long?
I don't know.
Why were you talking so slowly? Is it because we've not got a lot to say this week?
It might be. Yeah. Might be that the level of prep that I've done is I've watched the two episodes of a show that ran for two seasons.
Hey, yes, you're right. Now, we're breaking our rule, aren't we? We're staying in 1985, which is the same year as The Colour Purple, but we're breaking our rule and we're doing TV. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I feel very upset because I couldn't follow what was going on because I hadn't seen any of the other episodes.
We watched the first one, so that would be all right, wouldn't it?
Nah, threw me right off.
Okay, fine.
By the time that we got to episode 5, I was just like completely lost.
I mean, yeah.
If something was in the war.
It's a different setting. Yeah, yeah, I know. Mad, isn't it? Mad. I suppose if there was anyone we're going to do it for, Steven Spielberg, probably a reasonable sort of request to watch some of the TV that he directed, I guess.
We couldn't exactly break that rule for Tom Cruise, given that he hadn't been in any TV.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, actually, do you know what? Before we get into Amazing Stories, and you've mentioned him, so we might as well go into it. It's time for Cruise News.
Cruise News.
All right, we got a couple of points here. Apparently, Tom Cruise is dating a Russian socialite. Apparently they've made their relationship official. Let me just double check this.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, that's fine, isn't it? It's fine.
Oh, hang on. 3 days ago.
Lots can happen in 3 days.
Yeah, I know. Hang on. Well, I got the news story slightly wrong.
Here we go.
He's broken up from the Russian socialite he was dating. Elsina Kairova was her name. Well, I mean, it still is her name, but she's no longer linked to Tom Cruise. Wow, he broke up with her just days after he met her children. What was wrong with her children? What did
Absolute
they say to him?
Pain in the ass. Like, no, done.
Here's something though. Tom Cruise, 61. Girlfriend, 36. That's not okay.
I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Equally though, I just don't care. The consenting adults, I don't care. It's not my business.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Are you not fascinated by like what was wrong with her kids?
I mean, that's more interesting. I don't really care too much about the age gap, given, again, consenting adults. But what happened with the kids that you went, oh, yeah, I definitely want to meet your kids. I'm serious enough about this that I should meet your kids. Oh, fuck yeah. No.
No, thank you. I wonder if it was because he's actually just picking a side in the coming World War. I wonder if that's what it is. Yeah. Because we, I mean, I'm thankful though, because you wouldn't want Tom Cruise against you in a war, would you? Really? No. Not with that suit from Edge of Tomorrow.
Is he the only one with it?
Yeah, I think so.
Russia have got their like three tanks and a helicopter or whatever they've reportedly got when they got parades out. And then Tom Cruise in a mech suit.
Who would win? Tom Cruise in a mech suit or three tanks and a helicopter? I'd put my money on Cruise. Yeah, yeah, I'd put my money on Cruise. Anyway, look, we've buried the lead a little bit because that's not the important Cruise news. Here's some other Cruise news. Tom Cruise has signed up to star in a new film by the Revenant director Alejandro Iñárritu. Thoughts on that?
He's doing what we said we reckoned he would do.
Yeah, I think he's
pushing the action to one side, or at least, you know, like not being completely the focus and pushing for that Oscar that he desperately wanted 30 years ago.
It is interesting that move comes quite quickly on the heels of an underperforming Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah. Well, that's another bit of Cruise news, really, isn't it? I mean, it's not super new news, but the fact that Dead Reckoning Part 2 is now going to have a different title and Dead Reckoning Part 1 is just Dead Reckoning.
I think we always knew it was going to, though, didn't we?
I mean, I don't really know how it got that far with that name of Mission Impossible. Mission:Impossible- Dead Reckoning: Part 1.
Well, but they
just
had
do
to
an
make
Infinity
it...
War and Endgame. Just do an Infinity War and Endgame. Just realize at that point you go, this is just messy. Should we just? They're two different films. Should we give them two different names? Yeah.
Well, now hang on. Because I'm pretty sure when it was being marketed, wasn't it called Infinity War Part 1?
Yes, but not when the film came out.
Well, I don't know, but we didn't know what the sequel was called, what is going on like here. It's just a marketing thing, isn't it? That they wanted to make sure that people knew it was Part 1 so it didn't end and people went, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah. But I still feel like it's a difference between, for example, with like Dune, you got Dune Part 1, Dune Part 2, but the first one's just Dune, and then at the end it's all like Part 1 or whatever. You're like, oh, like...
No. I've had this discussion with other people. It was always called Dune Part 1. There were posters that were called Dune Part 1. What are you talking about?
I don't know. Okay, I don't think it's called Dune Part 1 on Letterboxd, is it? Is it?
They changed the title after it came out, which is what they've done with Mission Impossible.
That's all for like marketing, right? Like... They were never going to be able to go, "Here's Dune Part 2, the first one didn't do well," or anything like that. Whereas something like Dead Reckoning Part 1, that's like a panicked reaction to an underperforming film. I think
I don't think so.
You think they would have given it a different...
They would have given that a different title the whole time. For a start, they say the words Dead Reckoning in the movie, don't they?
Sure.
Unless they keep going on about Dead Reckoning in the second one, I don't think they were ever going to call it that. Same as Infinity War Part 1, same as Dune Part 1. They were always going to change that. It's for marketing and marketing. The panicked response to the underperforming nature of the film is Tom Cruise going, "Please, can I work with Alejandro Iñárritu?"
Yes.
Yes. Now, how do you feel about him working with Iñárritu?
I've seen a couple of his films. I was a fan of The Revenant. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do together, because I can kind of imagine Cruise still, like, it'll be interesting whether or not they go full on like just drama, or if they utilize some of Cruise's stuntiness. That's a word.
Well,
I'm just thinking of like The Revenant.
The Revenant was like a Jackass movie, right? With Leonardo DiCaprio. There's nothing the man wouldn't do, you know? He was tossed about by a rig for a bear thing. He ate, I don't know, human flesh. Is that what it was in The Revenant? Is that what he was doing?
No, I think it's like just raw deer flesh or something. Sure. But yeah.
He got inside a horse. Didn't he get inside a horse or something?
Yeah. He went in a very cold river.
Yes, he was very cold for some of the film. Now, maybe Iñárritu's next film is like genuinely pushing the limits of what a human can be put through. Yeah. Which is why they've got Tom Cruise. Maybe it's that. I don't know. I think, and it might well be that like there's some kind of mad, like he might want to do a one take movie again, like Birdman or something.
Right.
And there were long takes in The Revenant and stuff, right? But I don't know. It'll be interesting because he is definitely an auteur with a very specific vision. He makes very specific films. I have to say, I don't like loads of his films, personally. I did like Birdman.
Yeah.
Didn't like The Revenant. Didn't like Babel. Didn't really like 21 Grams. Amores Perros was like, I remember it being fine. I remember really liking it in college because, oh, it's a foreign movie, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
And isn't it, Amores Perros is, it was like, I mean, that was his thing for a little while. Before his thing became, we're doing this all in one shot, his thing was lots of stories coming together, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like lots of different characters, lots of separated characters.
I remember seeing Babel in the cinema, and I don't really remember what my reaction to it was.
It's just a film that thinks it's saying loads, but isn't really saying anything at all, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. He's Tom Cruise also tentatively attached to the next and final Quentin Tarantino movie.
Yeah, I saw somebody writing about the him being attached to the new the next film from that director, and whether or not that would mean that he isn't going to be attached to the Tarantino film.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But just the notion that he was sort of circling it is promising and is in line with him now being cast in the Iñárritu movie, you know?
Yeah. Like just that being those two being like the next potential roles is just like far more interesting than anything he's done for decades.
He's
obviously his Mission Impossible films.
But. Yeah. He is up to something though. I'm suspicious. I don't know about you.
What, you think there's some sort of ploy? He's going to spread Scientology through the screen from these arty directors.
I think he wants the Oscar, doesn't he?
Wants a cheeky little trophy.
Wants it, you know, he's been nominated 3 times, hasn't had one yet.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time.
Just
he's
a
not getting
reminder
any
for everyone. Reminder for everyone on the podcast. Nicolas Cage has got one.
Oh, God, what's that for again?
Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. Yes, I mean, nominated 3 times, not had one, not getting any younger. And I have to say, like you said earlier, this is what we kind of, maybe not predicted, but hoped he would do. Start going into more kind of low-key, maybe, character work. I mean, this is where we find out that this is going to be Iñárritu's first foray into the mega-budget action movie.
Yeah, and actually, he's doing a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it's the other way
he's doing Iron Man 5 or something.
It's the other way around. Anyway, look, amazing stories. Tom, had you ever heard of this before, mate?
I'd heard of it because there's the Apple TV version, which I have not watched, but I've seen it on the app.
Okay, right. Yeah. Okay.
So not really. Maybe I had, but I'd paid it no mind. Had you?
Yeah, I think I recognised the title and I was like, oh yeah. And do you know what? Right, actually, when I was preparing the schedule for this podcast, I thought it was like Twilight Zone. I thought it was a film, but it was an anthology and he directed like a segment. I didn't actually know it was a TV show.
Well, they did release it as a little compilation movie in some markets.
Yes, I saw
that. They got three episodes and stuck them together.
But yeah, and it's not even like, it's produced, I suppose it's developed by, Amazing Stories is actually an old sci-fi comic that they're licensing the name of. I imagine because Spielberg read it as a child. But also I think it's one of the, like, in the mid-80s, we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but in the mid-80s, he became a bit of an industry unto himself, Steven Spielberg. He and Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall, two other producers, founded the production company Amblin Entertainment. Now, you have heard of Amblin Entertainment.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah. Between 1984 and 1990, Spielberg served as either producer or executive producer on 19 different feature films, as well as directing his own films once a year. Here are some titles. I'm just going to throw out some titles, Tom. Tell me if you recognise any of these movies from between 1984 and 1990. All of these were produced by Steven Spielberg. Gremlins.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Back to the Future.
Yep.
Back to the Future Part 2.
Yep, I've heard of that one as well, yep.
The Goonies.
Yep.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yep.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Vaguely, but
yeah,
sure.
Maybe. Maybe.
Yep, maybe.
Arachnophobia.
Yep.
And Martin Scorsese's Cape Fear remake.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And then there were other films like Harry and the Hendersons and Young Sherlock Holmes, where the title Steven Spielberg Presents was in the opening credits. So they're doing that Poltergeist thing of really trading like heavily on the fact that he produced it. And then he also produced a bunch of stuff that was aimed at like children and teenagers, which actually all of those movies are. But he also did cartoons. So he did Tiny Toon Adventures, Animaniacs. Remember Animaniacs?
I loved Animaniacs as a kid.
That's Steven Spielberg. Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah.
Freakazoid, which I don't think we really had over here.
No.
And Family Dog, we didn't really have over here. But then Spielberg also produced those animated films that were directed by Don Bluth. Have you seen An American Tale? I think you have. Fievel, you know, the little mouse.
Yeah, I might have.
Yeah, and also The Land Before Time.
Yes.
Those are all Steven Spielberg productions. And then in 1985... NBC offered Steven Spielberg a 2-year contract to make the television series Amazing Stories, right? And it was kind of a blend between The Twilight Zone and Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And NBC gave Spielberg creative control, of course.
Of course.
And a budget of $1 million per episode.
Okay.
Which... that's quite high budget, is it not?
I guess. I mean, how many episodes are there in a season? What, like
100? Oh, I don't know. you went very low and I went very high. I'm not sure. I'm not actually sure. There was 24 episodes in series one.
Jesus.
And 21 episodes in series two. I mean, that's standard, like, American season length, I suppose.
Yeah.
But Steven Spielberg actually did, like, as well as producing, he directed two episodes of the first season, Ghost Train and The Mission, and we watched them both, didn't we?
Yep.
And the first one's called Ghost Train, and it was the first episode of the first season. It was written by Frank Dees, which is actually more or less how I feel about it. And it starred the old guy from Home Alone and a small version of Lucas Haas.
Cool. It was absolutely fine.
Wasn't it? But hang on. Let's talk about the titles, though, because triumphant music, a caveman telling a story, perhaps an amazing story, PS1 graphics of a scroll.
Oh my God.
And then a skull, and then a spaceship, and then the caveman again, but this time he's on TV. It looked mad.
It looked fucking awful, and I'm sure, I'm sure at the time people were wowed by it. Right?
When did the PS1 come out though? Because it is PS1 graphics.
It's like 95.
Right, so we're like 10 years before the PlayStation 1.
Give them some credit. That was cutting edge, but it is shocking. It's not bad, but also shocking. Like, it's really, really bad.
Oh, God. What's the first one about? It's about this family who moved from the city to, like, a rural area where there had previously been a train crash. Is that right?
Yeah. They kind of and dropped the old, that in over first.
Yes.
Third.
And the old granddad, he remembers the train crash and he decides to set it right. What happens here, Tom?
So it's a bit confusing at the beginning, honestly. They don't do exactly a great job of doing some exposition for it. Like, because the parents and the kid are bringing the granddad to the house. Not entirely clear why, but...
I think it becomes clear over the course of the episode, I'd say.
I know why the granddad would want to go to the house, but he's also complaining that they've built the house there.
Yeah. Well, it's because he's old, isn't it? And he's going to die, confused. Basically.
Yeah.
They're basically offering some kind of like hospice, yes. I think. But yeah, I don't get what he's trying to do because he remembers a train crash and he needs to be awake because the ghost train is going to crash into the house. I didn't understand the mechanics of it.
No, like he clearly knows that the train will be coming and yet is surprised when he discovers that the train is going to be coming. He's going to this house because he knows he's old and he's going to die soon, but also he can't be asleep, let alone dead, because then he won't be able to get on the train, which is clearly a metaphor for him dying, even though the whole point is that he should have died on that day and instead, you know, it's kind of like a trolley problem situation and he caused everyone on the train to die.
Okay, oh, is that what it is? Okay. So he wants to set it right or something. Yeah. Is that right?
He's setting it right before he dies, but also dying is setting it right. But he's not allowed to die. He has to stay awake so he can get on the train because then he'll be dead.
Okay. Who cares? Yeah. I don't know.
It's fine.
There's loads of stuff. The train set stuff was nice. It's basically the same shots from The Fabelmans that we've already seen.
Yeah.
And then the train approaching with all the lights shining into the house felt just kind of pure Spielberg, you know. It felt like Close Encounters or Poltergeist or whatever.
Yes.
And then at that point, I was thinking that Spielberg might be involved in some kind of embezzlement scheme on that budget of $1 million an episode. But then the train does actually come through the house and I'm like, oh, okay, there's the budget and all the people in costumes and all the ghosts and everything. I ultimately quite liked it, actually. It's about death and it's about saying goodbye and it's about the importance of stories and telling them. And he got to do some, Spielberg got to do some of his neat visual stuff that we haven't seen in a little while, you know? With him doing a serious drama in The Color Purple, he didn't get to do very much like flashy visual stuff. I don't know what he was doing on The Twilight Zone. He really didn't want to be there. He couldn't be bothered. So he didn't do a lot of like neat visual stuff. And then even E.T. is just kind of about very nicely just telling that story. So yeah, it reminded me of like Jaws or Amblin, you know, where he was doing all those visual tricks on Amblin. There's one where you can see the grandpa through a hole in the metal thing that appears on screen.
Yes.
Yeah, very neat, very flashy, and it was Deese. Frank Deese. If I were to be Frank Deese, how about that?
Sure, you can have that. I kind of felt like Spielberg was kind of going for that, like, very melodramatic, sickly sweet kind of ending that he usually aims for, but because it was like TV budget and TV length didn't really like put in 2 hours of like emotional weight behind it. It just kind of felt a little bit like the end of a straight to TV Christmas movie where like little boy speaks to Santa and gets the present he wanted. You be a good boy, son. And it's like it doesn't really land. It's a bit too cheesy.
I tell you what, though, what an amazing story don't you think?
Yeah. He's so desperate to remake the Twilight Zone, isn't he? He wants to make a little, like, broader sci-fi Twilight Zone now that he can't ever go back to Twilight Zone because his own childhood has been destroyed by the death of children. He can't go back to that property ever again. So now he has to be like, guys, we'll do the same thing with amazing stories.
Yeah, I was... I mean, it's only 26 minutes long, isn't it, Ghost Train? So it's like...
Yeah.
It's whatever. But then the mission, which is episode 5 of the first season, and it's another one that he directed. I was looking at it, I was going like, okay, this one is a double length, right? So it's like 46 minutes, it's an hour block with adverts and stuff, right? Set in World War II on a bomber plane, yeah? What does it say here? With the landing gear damage, he must rely on his imagination to get out of this predicament, right? I know I haven't done the setup yet, but I saw that.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is going to be an amazing story, you know?
Yeah.
I just thought that was going to be ball to the walls, absolutely insane. And it's just sort of a normal story about a plane.
Yeah.
With...
It's like a very small section of...
Yeah.
And Band of Brothers kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like one scene from that, and you're like, sure.
And then just sort of like the last 5 minutes is just real Deus Ex Machina kind of nonsense.
Oh, it's so shit.
Really?
It's so shit. It's shit anyway, on so on. Many levels. Because,
hang on, stop.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Let's not talk about the end before we've talked about the beginning. The mission was written by Menno Meyers.
Okay? Should they choose to accept it?
That's nope. That's the wrong podcast.
Mission Impossible.
We're talking about a different thing now. Written by Menno Meyers, who wrote the screenplay for The Color Purple. Okay, so
cool.
That's why I think that's why it's kind of written like a serious drama, and it stars Kevin Costner, who. Was nearly our season, right?
I mean, he was floated. I wouldn't say he was nearly our season.
We got close.
The Ford Report was more
real
likely.
Close. Yeah, but then right behind the Ford Report was the Costner Rossner.
It wouldn't have to be the Costner Roster. It couldn't be the Costner Rostner.
Well, no, but it has to rhyme with. It has to be the same as the first name.
But it loses you know what it's... the word is. You can't.
But you know, there's no word called, that's rapport, right? You know that that's the same thing.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, we nearly did the Costner Rossner. I don't know if we would have included this. We might if we had realised it was directed by Steven Spielberg, I suppose, because that would have been an interesting place to start with Costner on TV, because this is like right before. Kevin Costner breaks. It's like 2 years before The Untouchables, and I think he'd done Silverado at this point. I think he's good in this, Tom. What's your experience in general of Kevin Costner?
I don't think it's that much. I think he's one of those actors that, like, I've always known who he is, but I may not have actually seen him in many films.
Well, okay, I'm going to do you a real solid here, and I'm going to name one film that you've definitely seen him in, okay?
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
Man of Steel.
Oh, yes. The classic that is.
I can name another one. I can name another two. I can name another two. Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Oh, yes. Even better. Yep.
And Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Well, it's marginally better than the other one. Yeah, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But
wow. Those are, I imagine, are his best films, right?
No, not really. He's sort of famous for The Untouchables, Bull Durham, Field of Dreams, Dances with Wolves, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, JFK, The Bodyguard, Wyatt Earp, Waterworld, The Postman, For the Love of the Game, I think I've seen Robin Hood. Towards the end. Yeah, you've probably seen Robin Hood. I haven't seen Robin Hood, but I'm a bit of a Costner fan. He's kind of most famous for westerns.
That's probably why he's kind of a big western guy. I'm not. Yeah.
Do you not like westerns?
No, I've just never been that bothered. Like a lot of the classics, I haven't seen. It's not like I would. I'm like against watching them. I'm just not that excited by the idea of a western. So I just don't get around to watching them.
He's an interesting guy in his own right as well, because some of these films he produced and starred in, and then other ones he directed as well. Kevin Costner is a director. There's no reason that you would have heard of this, but have you heard of Horizon, an American Saga?
I think I might have, but I don't know what it is.
It's coming out like... It's coming out this year, right? And it's an upcoming two-part American epic western that is co-written, produced, directed by, and starring Kevin Costner.
Right.
Okay?
Will it be called Part 1?
Chapter 1. Well, Chapter 1 comes out on June 28th.
Oh, here we go.
And Chapter 2 comes out on August 16th.
Right, well, we'll see how Part 1 goes.
It's only like 6 weeks between them. Yeah, we'll see what they're called. But at the moment, both films are just called Horizon and American Saga. But the thing is that Kevin Costner, right, said that he had 5 films planned, okay? Right. And then he said, I'm finishing up the first film, but it's got to be split into 2 chapters, which means this 2-part film is just one of the 5 chapters that he's planning to make.
That is optimism.
And also, I have to point out, right, one of the most famous westerns that he directed is Dances with Wolves, okay? And that's 4 hours long.
Oh.
Yeah? So the guy that made a 4-hour western made Horizon and then went, this one's too long, we've got to split it into 2. I can only assume that it has an 8-hour running time, that he's split into 2 sections of 4 hours, and that there's another 5 to 10 movies coming after it.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
I'm all in.
No.
I've seen the trailer. The trailer is a shot of the desert and then Kevin Costner on a horse firing a gun at the camera, and that's the whole trailer.
Oh.
And I'm all in, Tom.
Sounds shit.
No, it sounds incredible.
It's not going to sell well enough, and then he'll have to cancel the whole thing and everyone will get parts 1 and 2 of part 1 of 5.
Tom is...
It's gonna be like fucking It's gonna be every cinematic universe other than Marvel that's been created in the past like 20 years.
Oh my god. Parts 1 and 2 of part 1 of 5. Yeah. It's too much movie. But I'm all in on it, Tom. I just can't wait. I cannot wait for that. I think he's kind of parlaying the fact that isn't he like a huge deal now? Because he stars in Yellowstone, right?
Right.
Have you heard of Yellowstone?
I've heard of Yellowstone, yeah. And I know that they made a prequel or something with Harrison Ford aboard.
Indeed. But there's also like 2 other spin-offs as well.
Right.
Like it's a generational sort of thing. I've only heard of one of them because of the Harrison Ford connection. But there's another one that takes place in between them. And yeah, and there's like 4 seasons of Yellowstone with Kevin Costner in. That's all Western adjacent as well. I don't know, man. It seems like my thing. Should I get heavily into Yellowstone?
I mean, if you want, I've heard it's good.
It's on Paramount Plus. So.
We've all got Paramount Plus.
Who's getting Paramount Plus? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Who else is in the mission? Kevin Bacon is what I wrote down until I realised it was Kiefer Sutherland. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you're a fucking idiot, mate. I thought like Kevin Bacon was in it. No, the answer is no.
I know what I did, which is like, oh, we've seen him before on this podcast because he was in A Few Good Men, and they're both in A Few Good Men, and I just wrote down Kevin Bacon. Both their names start with a K. You know, you can't blame me, Tom. You can't blame me. But it is Kiefer Sutherland, Jack Bauer himself. And it is, again, just before he breaks, because Stand By Me is his first film, and it comes out the year after this.
Wow. He looks so there you go. Older in this than he does in Stand By Me.
There were a few shots where I was like, is Kiefer Sutherland 16 in this? But generally, yes, they've kind of aged him up. Yeah, maybe. And then, Tom, the music. It's by John Williams.
Is it? I didn't pay any attention to that.
Okay. I only looked it up because there's one bit near the end where I was like, God, that sounds like something John Williams would do. And I looked it up and lo and behold, it's the man himself.
Of course.
The title sequence still fucks. It was absolutely incredible title sequence. I'm going to have that played at my funeral. And this one takes place in a World War II bomber plane and has kind of a weirdly deliberate pace at the start. It's quite slow, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a one shot for quite a while, was, I thought, quite good. But there's a lot of setup. You know, it's a lot of people. It's Spielberg doing his thing of having people in the background, moving to the foreground, going back into the mid, and you know, like back and forth, lots of things going on at once. I thought it was quite good.
It was all sort of quite moody and quite dimly shot. It had like a weird level. It had a weird level of realism, like at the beginning, anyway, with these characters talking to each other, and I think that. I think that's to serve as a contrast to like the second half of the episode, but it does make for a bit of a slow start. And I also, I was thinking about this. I think it's interesting that Spielberg so often deals in like scope and size and like, you know, with The Color Purple, he tried to make like an epic, and his films take place in like, I mean, so many of them like have aliens and stuff in, and like he's shot on like the open sea, and he shoots in deserts, you know. For TV, his episodes take place in a house for the first one, and this one takes place in a plane. Like,
yeah,
this one especially is very, very like close quarters, isn't it? It's a small environment,
and I think that probably is a smart thing to do for TV, because it means that you kind of, you're basing everything really on the interaction between the characters, which is probably a safer bet than trying to like wow with spectacle when you've got a limited time and budget.
Also, TV in general was just sort of smaller, right?
Yeah, like it was before like the HBO
era. TV. Yeah, exactly. Today's TV, like Game of Thrones and stuff, it's like movie quality sort of TV. And I think TV was probably just inherently smaller. But I wasn't expecting it to be this small. And it's about a bunch of guys on a plane. World War II bomber. There's some explosions and stuff. And a guy gets trapped in this sort of small turret thing. And they can't land because they haven't got any landing gear. Or rather, if they did land, it would crush the guy, because the turret's at the bottom of the plane. And he does lots of lovely drawings. Is that right?
Yeah, that's basically it.
I watched it. But it's basically them sort of, they try all sorts of stuff. They try hitting things. They try burning themselves. They try tearing a parachute in half, and
well,
none of it
worked.
Try
doing that. They succeeded in that. No, they succeeded in tearing the parachute in half.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of the many things that they tried. I don't know whose decision it was to invite his wife to the airfield. Yeah, I don't know who's making that call.
I mean, all of it is where you're like, I feel like one draft got written, and there were a few things that like just didn't tie up, but they just went, it's fine, isn't it? Because if there's typos, we'll just correct that when the actors say the lines. It doesn't matter. And it's like, but there's this little bit about where his wife, his pregnant wife, needs to be taken to America because you're American, she's presumably British, but she's just going to turn up at the fucking airfield. Like, why is she there? She doesn't even know. that you're out on a mission. Why would she know any of this stuff? Why would she drive onto a fucking runway? Why is she allowed there?
I imagine that the military would have called her and said, your husband's in grave danger. This is the situation. Do you want to pop down and watch him die?
Yeah.
Like, I imagine that's what it, what that's it would what, have been, right?
Well, that's weird, because that's what they say to every soldier all the time. They're constantly on the phone to the wise going, yeah, so your husband, he's actually in World War II, so I don't know how to tell you this, but he could die at any moment. Do you want to hang around the Air Force base at midnight? We're worried he might get crushed to death because they can't land the plane. And even if he didn't, he'd probably die from the crash anyway. Come and have a look. Have a look. He'll be the one you can see die. It's so stupid.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. But hey, well, this is something, right? As they're landing the plane, in his little turret, he starts to draw the plane, but he draws it with landing gear, and then asks the captain to put the landing gear down, and it has landing gear now, actually, so it's all fine.
Yeah.
And that all happens in the last 5 minutes of the thing.
Yeah.
This is a double episode, so we've got 40 minutes of tense, semi-realistic, dialogue-driven drama about a kind of, like, it's almost a moral problem, you know? Do we land and save everybody except for this one guy?
Yeah.
Is that us killing him? Do we kill him before he, you know, is crushed to death by the plane? And in the last 5 minutes, he uses his magic by drawing the landing gear onto the plane.
And they don't just... stupid. They don't just add some, you know... They don't just have the landing gear be normal landing gear. You know,
no, they're animated.
Obviously, they use those brilliant computer graphics that they've got for the intro.
Now, I was interested in this. Is that CGI or is it like hand animated?
I mean, either way, Adam, it's shit.
I thought it looked quite cool.
No, I hated it. It looked so wacky. It was Looney Tunes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that's the point, because he's an illustrator. He wants to be a cartoonist. It's supposed to look like a cartoon. I hate the plot point. Don't get me wrong. Like, absolutely awful. Such Deus Ex Machina bullshit.
I didn't mind
how it looked. I thought that was quite cool.
Imagine if throughout the whole runtime, like the 40 minutes beforehand, they'd peppered in little things. Like maybe he drew something with... you know, inside the cockpit, and then they were like, oh, where'd that come from? I don't know. And little things to suggest that maybe something supernatural was going on with this lucky kid. Just so it, like, this made some sense.
That is exactly what I thought was going to happen based on the synopsis. A turret gunner, an aspiring cartoonist, is trapped in the compartment of a World War II bomber. With the landing gear damaged, he must rely on his imagination to get out of this predicament. I thought he was going to be drawing all kinds of wacky shit. I thought he was going to be like... I thought they were going to do a Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
He was going to be the only thing that wasn't animated for a stretch. But it's just like one set of landing gear, 5 minutes from the end, and that's it.
Yeah. It's not, and then all the landing gear just disappears.
He snaps out of his trance.
Exactly, yeah, but it's just like, I don't know, it's just weak. It's really weak.
What an amazing story.
And I actually think I prefer the mission to Ghost Train.
Yeah, I do, until the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just really lets itself down.
Yeah. What did you think of the whole thing? Glad we watched it?
I mean, yeah, I guess. I don't think Spielberg, I just don't think his talents lend themselves to TV. I'm sorry, Spielberg. As a director, I don't think.
Hey, that's okay. Steven Spielberg's here.
He's joined the conversation.
He's gone. He's gone again.
I just don't think it translates well. It's not bad.
It's decent.
Yeah.
To be frank, dece. Right?
I think the difficulty is that it again, it's not Ron Howard. If Ron Howard had made these, then we'd go, oh, Ron Howard, your films are perfectly fine and your TV shows perfectly fine. But instead, it's Steven Spielberg. You've made some of the greatest movies ever made, and you keep churning out very unremarkable stuff for your TV, even when it's your passion project.
Well, this is my thing, is I'm almost kind of the other way on it, which is like, I think this show is like decent, but I'm basing that on two episodes directed by one of the greatest directors of all time. Yeah. So like, I can't endorse the show. No. The rest of it might be shite. That like, if these ones were directed by Steven Spielberg, imagine how bad the other ones might
be. There's got to be some clangers in there.
There's got to be. I will say that loads of the episodes have the credit story by Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
Should we do all those as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Please don't.
There's one directed by Clint Eastwood starring Harvey Keitel.
There's one by Martin Scorsese.
What? Is there?
Yeah.
What?
It's called Mirror, Mirror.
It's got Sam Waterston and Tim Robbins in it. What is this TV show?
This TV show
was... man gets a hairpiece that drives him to murder.
Jesus.
Cool.
I feel like this TV show was like the MCU before the cinematic universes existed. So it was just, shall we get Spielberg to just get every actor you can possibly think of and every director you can possibly think of, and they'll all just put in one big compilation.
The opening episode of season two is story by Steven Spielberg, directed by Danny DeVito. From the twisted mind of Danny DeVito. Robert Zemeckis does one. Wow, incredible stuff. Brad Bird does one. Cool. Oh, that's the animated one that then got spun off into a different... So, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Is that Batteries Not Included?
But Batteries Not Included was going to be an episode of this, wasn't it? And then Spielberg liked the idea so much that he produced a film based on it. No, this was an animated episode called Family Dog, which I have to assume became the series Family Dog that Steven Spielberg produced that I mentioned earlier. Yes, it is. It is that. Who cares? After two seasons, it had disappointing ratings and the show was not renewed after the end of that two-year deal that they had. And in terms of legacy, I don't know, you're telling me it had a reboot in 2020, but I'm not convinced.
I imagine it was Spielberg basically going, right, so now that we actually have computer-generated visuals that don't look shocking and are like commonplace, maybe we can actually like realize some of these stories and like the
I hope
ideas.
That they have still overextended. Right. I hope that they've still chosen concepts that look shit. You know, that's my hope.
I think one of them is like a pilot that ends up, I don't know, flying back in time to Roswell or something like that.
Isn't that the fucking plot of the fifth Indiana Jones movie, isn't it?
Well, it's also anyway. Pretty sure it's two parts of a plot or two different plots shoved together from the X-Files, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, the time-travelling plane, which is also in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yep.
Yeah, it's all the same. Spoilers for Indiana Jones 5, by the way. Anything more to say on Amazing Stories, Tom?
No, I don't think I'll be checking out any other episodes.
Me neither. We'll leave it there, then. I'll tell you what, though. Yeah. Before we wrap up, it's time for our long-running game. Only one of us is allowed to look at the IMDb trivia page for each movie. And this week it's Tom. He's going to give me three pieces of trivia. Only one of them is one that he's made up. I'm going to have to discern which one that is in two crews and a lie. Tom, I currently owe you £16,384,000,000.
Yep.
Double or nothing?
Yep. Are we going to work
right
out what
then.
That is?
Okay. How do I... Now, I fucked this up last time, so why don't you work out? I just really struggled, so...
Let me have a think. I'll need a calculator for this. So we say it was 16 billion.
I reckon so. 384 million.
Okay.
Were you going to say round it? I'm happy to round it. Round it to a tenner.
Yeah. times two.
Yeah. Wait, is that how you double things? Have we been doubling wrong this whole time?
Times two again? No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you double things. I don't get it.
Well, you've got to factor in all the zeros, because obviously the zeros represent the amount of pennies in a pound. And it's well known that there are 3 million pennies to a pound.
I don't get it.
It's either 6 or 3 million.
I'm going to trust you.
Okay.
What would it be if we doubled that?
Right, now I might be confused, Adam.
Yeah.
But doubling it and then factoring in the sheer amount of pennies.
Yeah.
You would owe me £10,922.66 recurring.
How do I do recurring pennies? Wait, 10,000?
Yes. I think I might have gone wrong somewhere.
I'll have to see it written down. So 10, so just do it digits. 10. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 922.
What's next? 922.
Point.
Oh, point.
Yeah.
6 recurring.
Yeah.
Ooh. it looks weird written down. It does. Honest. But it's a lot of numbers because it's recurring. So it must be more than the figure we had before because it's got more numbers.
Yeah, it's technically it's infinite, right?
Yeah.
So.
So do I owe you an infinite amount of money? No, because it's 10,922.6 recurring.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Well.
Sure.
Yep. Let's see what's going on. Why don't you? Why don't you hit me with this trivia?
Okay. Number one. In the opening credits, the cave people and the 20th century family watching them are played by the same actors.
Oh, no, that's not true, because one had long hair and one had short hair. Next.
Okay. Number two. James Cameron was asked to work on Amazing Stories, but he declined to continue writing his Alien screenplay.
That could be correct. I also had, imagine that he had an issue with the idea that none of it was going to be like underwater or something.
Yeah.
You know? I imagine it was that.
Okay.
All right.
Number three.
True. Yeah.
Martin Scorsese plays the older man in the 20th Century Family during the opening sequence. They aged him using makeup, and he looks almost identical to how he does today. I'm telling you, Martin Scorsese is in that opening credit sequence, mate.
Which means he's also the guy playing the in the family, right? Because the caveman family is the same as...
Yes, well, presumably, unless the first one's not true.
Well, if the first one's not true, then... Oh, God. Okay. You've presented me with what I think is a logic problem. I'm going to roll a dice and see what comes up. Now, where are my dice? Don't know where they've gone. So, I don't know. 3 is the lie.
Adam.
Yeah.
3 is the lie.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes.
Oh, man.
So the slate has been wiped clean. I tell you what, that was more luck than judgment. I'll tell you that.
Genuinely, okay. If you ever watch one of those episodes, for whatever reason, it's uncanny the fact that he looks like Martin Scorsese. And then for me to then find out going into the trivia that Martin Scorsese directed an episode.
I'm worried about where my dice are now, to be honest with you. Because I don't know. I've got to have my dice, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know where they are. Anyway, should we? That's how. I mean, I'm going to just do random selections from now on. That was just a complete guess.
Nice.
Wow. So if I don't think about it, I get it right. That's interesting. Anyway, that's how and why we play Two Crews and a Lie. All right, that'll do it. It's a good outcome for me this week. I like that. It's nice to taste victory every once in a while, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you did save yourself billions at the end of last season.
I thought it was only 10,000. Who knows?
Oh, the end of last season. Yeah.
I tell you what, I bet you £1,000 I get next week's right as well.
Sure.
Okay. Lovely. You're on. You're on.
Cool.
Next week, we are going to explore and discuss Empire of the Sun. Tom, have you seen this one before? What are you expecting from it?
I have seen it before, but I saw it yesterday in preparation.
Tom,
I've not.
No, okay, cool.
Is it true there's a young Christian Bale in it with the same face as old Christian Bale?
That's what I've heard. Wait, he's got the same...
He looks exactly the same. Not that I've seen it, but he looks... It's the... Okay. It's the same. Everything's
the same. I genuinely haven't seen it. So I'm gonna watch it ahead of next week. Probably.
Yeah,
probably. Totally. It'd be ideal if I've seen it before we do the episode on it. Anyway, listeners, come and join us for that. But before you join us, let us know what you think of Amazing Stories. It is available online. If you go to the Internet Archive, all of the episodes are up there. Find us on Twitter and Instagram, Film Encounters. It's all that. If you search Film Encounters, you'll find us. Email us. filmencounterspod@gmail.com. We're on Letterboxd, Tom Ashford, Adam Glasspool. But while you're doing that, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to watch Empire of the Sun before next week's episode. And this podcast will self-destruct in 5 seconds.